Somebody that I've gotten to know over the past year, and excited to hear from her and have her share some of her experience, strength, and hope with us. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce Tammy Nananabubu B from Orchid.
Hi, my name's Tammy Bendel, Nanny Moon Pie, and I'm an alcoholic. My niece and her brothers and sisters, when they were younger, couldn't say Tammy very well, and one of them called me Nanny, and I used to get drunk and moon them quite a bit, so they turned into Nanny Moon Pie at some point in life, and it stuck. So, yeah, it was not fun to drink with. I was hoping for a lot more birthdays, so I didn't have to talk as long, but, you know, it happens. It happens. And I want to thank Vicki for asking me to speak tonight, and I appreciate that. I always like being of service. My first thought was, though, I can't speak because my teeth are in the shop. But I'll do it anyway, you know, because that's what it takes around here to help out and get me out of myself. I was nervous all day long, and I thought, well, I should plan what I'm going to say, and I thought, oh, no, I shouldn't, because life for me rarely goes as I plan it, and that's why I keep coming back. So let's see. My sobriety date is September 7th, 2008. Do the math. It was my second trip to Alcoholics Anonymous. My first trip was, I got sober in Lompoc, I relapsed, and I stayed drunk for 9 years. So this is my second time around from this area. What it was like, gosh, I grew up with a very poor family. My family was Okies from Oklahoma. My grandma raised all of her kids in the Dust Bowl in a tent, 7 kids, and they picked cotton. And then we grew up in Taft in the oil field, so in a trailer. So I'm Okie redneck oil field trash. To get technical, you know. We were poor. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't go on Facebook or Twitter, any of that bullshit. We played in the oil fields, and we played barefoot in the 100-degree weather, and we rode the pump jacks and got in trouble. I just should, like, give a little disclaimer. I never really know when I talk, even if I'm sharing at a meeting, what's going to come out of my mouth, so I will probably more than likely offend at least one of you. Yes. And there are times when I use the F word like a comma. I'm hoping tonight's not one of those times. But if you are offended by the F word, get over it. Drugs are a part of my story, and they're not a big part because for me, I was a trash can, but it always began and ended with alcohol. So I don't even bother telling you all that stuff. You know, for me, I'm an alcoholic. Anyway, we grew up very poor, bounced around for all over when I was younger, and my parents split up when I was very young, and my dad worked for Motel 6, so we traveled a lot. You know, we'd go to Michigan and stay for 6 months while he built a motel, and then we'd move on to the next town, so I never really made any long-lasting friends, and we never stuck in one spot very, very often. My mom was a drunk, so she didn't have custody of us. My mom was a town drunk in Taft, California, which is a great place to be a town drunk. It's a very small town. She grew up in Maricopa. I think there were like 19 people in her graduating class, so two of them were brothers and sisters. Anyway, small town. Then I moved to Lompoc with my dad. And I did the most of my damage in Lompoc. When I first came, my very first meeting I went to, one of the guys I had been screwing around with was there, and I did not want to see him, and he did not want to see me, and it was so embarrassing. And I thought, oh God, it's been, you know, kind of a joke in my head that a good meeting for me is where I go and there's not someone in the room I've slept with or drank with. You look. Okay, it's a good night. I'll let him drink with some of you, but thank God, yeah. Anyway. So anyway, I grew up with one parent or the other. My parents fought about us kids. I have one brother. They fought about us a lot, who was going to take us and who was going to raise us. And so we bounced back and forth a lot. So my mother, being the town drunk that she was never home. So we raised ourselves in Taft. And the very, very, very first time I ever drank, I was probably, I want to say 12 or 13, and we were out in the oil fields with my brother and some of his friends. I think there were like 12 of us that drove out there in a Pinto. And they had a case of Mickey Big Mouth, and I remember drinking one and then thinking to myself, that's not going to be enough. So I put two in my purse. And for me, I think that's important and impactful because for me, the very first time I drank like an alcoholic, you know? What that, the alcohol that was there was not gonna fix me, was not gonna be enough, and I wanted more from the very first time I drank it. And, you know, things went along pretty well in high school. Like, I stayed out of trouble. I was actually a pretty good student for most of my school years. My brother got into a lot of trouble, though, and he ended up in prison. And in a small town life like Taft, that was pretty devastating because not only was my mom the town drunk, my brother was the town criminal now. And then mom had got shacked up with the town drug dealer. So it was great. It was great, you know. So, you know, I got through high school pretty well. I think I did pretty well in high school, and I think I was compensating for my brother, who was a total screw-up. So, and then I moved, right when I graduated high school, I moved to Lompoc to live with my dad, because I didn't want anything else to do with my mom. I was done with her drinking, and I, you know, I kept thinking to myself, gosh, if she really loved me, she would stop drinking. And of course, you know, she was an alcoholic, and she was the type of alcoholic that would drink until her intestines bled. And I don't know if you've ever had to deal with something like that. It's very, that's the type of alcoholic family that I come from. Mom would drink so much that her intestines bled. I remember one time she ended up in the emergency room, and her blood pressure was like 90 over 40 when she, by the time she went in, and she was almost dead. And then she'd get some fresh blood and she'd sober up, and then she'd start drinking again, and it would be the same cycle over and over. So I'd had enough of it at that point. And I moved from Taft to Lompoc to live with Dad. And Dad was like the kickback fun guy. He was the race car driver. He was the guy who, you know, had 20-year-old friends and partied a lot. And it was fun. It was pretty fun. He was an identical twin, and he was the fun twin, and his brother was the dick. Literally. The story was that they were identical twins, and they were, you know, when they were born, they only had one bassinet, because back then you didn't know you were going to have twins. So they named them Tom and Dick. And they tied a ribbon around one of them so they could tell them apart. Well, the ribbon fell off, so they happened, really. You know, my dad could have been a dick. I don't know. And they switched places in the Navy, too, and totally messed with their wives. It was... Yeah. Yeah, you never know. Maybe we're not. Maybe we're more related than we are. I don't know. So anyway, then I moved to Lompoc, and I had conned my mom into buying me a car. And I was working out on base at Martin Marietta. This was about the time the shuttle blew up the first time, and I had conned mom into giving me money for a car, and it was a 67 Mustang. Nice car. It was root beer brown with a gold stripe that went up the back, and it had traction bars, Holley 600 carb, and I got in so much trouble in that car. And when I bought it, my dad told me, you know, my dad was a very large, big guy. His hands were monstrous, and he said, if you buy that car, I will never turn a wrench on that car. He says, I'll hold the flashlight, and I'll wipe the sweat from your brow, and I will tell you exactly what to do, but I'm never working on that car if you buy that car. So I learned how to work on cars, which, you know, I don't know why I'm sharing that with you guys, but I did. I learned how to work on cars, and I was a Tom girl, and I think I used it to keep everybody away from me. I had indigestion since the barbecue yesterday.
You didn't have any of the hamburgers.
That's true. You know, I went to the barbecue yesterday at Waller Park. It was a blast. I took my kids with me and my daughter-in-law and grandkids, and they had so much fun. My oldest son, he was sitting out there with me, and he goes, hey, Mom, did you buy tickets for the 5150 raffle? But, you know, I mean, it's just a blessing that I was able to take my kids to that. I asked them, do you want to go? And I was like, I knew they were going to say no. And they said, oh, sure, we'll go. Okay. And they had a really good time. It was fun. Oh, let's see, where was I? Oh, okay, so I moved to Lompoc with Dad. And we lived in a trailer. The pattern here. We lived in a trailer, and we partied a lot. We would end up at parties all over the place. And I remember when I first moved to Lompoc with him, we would go to a party with his buddies. Remember, his buddies were like in their 20s, and they were all, you know, they all had race cars, and they were all, you know, cool guys. And I remember one time I went to a party, and I was, you know, I was good looking back then. I was 20 years old, hadn't had kids yet, you know. I had a nice car, and I went to a party, and all of his buddies were ignoring me. And I thought, Dad, your friends are rude. He goes, that's because I told them you're an undercover cop. So, you know, I partied with Dad. He was a 6 foot something, big guy, had a white beard, and he at Christmas would be Santa Claus for the Children's Home Society. And I was his elf. Me and a couple other crazy women. I don't know if you could call me a woman at that point, but I was his elf. And we made these really short red with a fur on the bottom and the little hats, and we would go around to all the children's home for Lompoc Children's Home Society, and we would give candy canes, and we would take my Mustang, that was our sled, and then we would go, after we got done doing visiting all the kids, we would go bar hopping, because everybody wanted to buy Santa Claus a drink, you know, and his elf. I think it was like 17 at the time. I couldn't even get into the bar, but Dad would vouch for me. Back then, you could vouch for people. So then we would go around and go to all the bars, and we would get free drinks because he was Santa and I was his elf, and we were cute. And that's what it was like. It was party time. Dad was the good time dad, and he wasn't really a dad. He was just my party buddy. But everybody loves him. Everybody still loves him till this day. I posted something on Facebook the other day, and one of my old friends says, oh, there's the legend. Dad was fun, you know? We would always, we would go on road trips with piece of shit cars that we weren't sure, that would break down 3 or 4 times, so we'd fix them, you know? That's what we did. So I hung around Lompoc for a while, and then the shuttle blew up, and I was jobless, and hung around Lompoc for a little while. I came back to Bakersfield to visit Mom, and fell in love with the kid's father. Got pregnant on our first date. and then I came back to Lompoc and didn't tell anybody I was pregnant. Finally, I told Dad I was pregnant, and then I told the guy that I was in love with that I was pregnant. We decided we would play house for a little while, and I had my first kid. I was 21. I remember I was 9 months pregnant, and he was born December 30th, and I turned 21 on December 28th. And I spent my birthday in a bar in Bakersfield drinking beer, 9 months pregnant. Because that's what I did. You know, it wasn't an option. So I had my son, and we played house for a little while, and I named my son, no shit, Cassidy Nelson, after Butch Cassidy and Willie Nelson. You see the theme here, the redneck, trailer trash, Okie theme. He still hates me for that. So anyway, I had my son, and we tried to play house, and I was not a very good parent. I had no clue what I was doing. My parents weren't the greatest example, you know? I had no clue what I was doing. I remember one time, we lived in Bakersfield, the kid's dad and I, and I remember one time I had gone to the bar after work, and I stayed out a couple hours, and then I was picking up my kid at the babysitter and going down an alley in this piece of crap car. My story's full of a lot of piece of crap cars. But I was going down this alley, and this kid came flying out between these houses and hit my car on his bicycle. And they called the cops. And no shit. The cop goes, he says, "You're drunk, aren't you?" I said, "You know, I've had a couple beers." And he says, "I'm going to take you to jail." And about then, Cassidy started crying. So I picked him up. And he goes, "I'm going to give you some sobriety tests." And I said, "Well, where am I going to put my son?" I said, "You can sit him right there in the front seat." I said, "Oh, no, there's a gun in there." "I'm not putting my kid around no gun." And he said, "Okay, all right, whatever, you're all right, just go home." And I got out of it. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I'll drive drunk with my kid in the car, but I'm not putting my kid next to a locked-up shotgun. I got really lucky when I was drinking. I never got, I got, I think, one drunken public and one DUI, which I pled down to a drinking under a controlled substance. It was during the cocaine years. And I remember I went to court for that, and they said, "Well, you're going to have to do 90 days. I said, "Oh, no, I'm not. I have kids." And the lady goes, "Yeah." So they did the electronic bracelet thing for me, which just allowed me to drink more. I would go to the bar when I was supposed to go to meetings. And I remember one time I got into a really bad accident on the way home from the bar with my bracelet on. So anyway, let's see, I had one kid at that point. And then the kid's dad and I, he worked out of town a lot. And I got pregnant with my daughter. And while I was pregnant with her, I can't remember what happened. I think he cheated on me or I cheated on him. I don't remember. Probably a little bit of both. And we split up. And I came back to Lompoc to raise my kids. And my entire family, it was very, very common to be my dad's side of the family, which all lived in Lompoc. My grandma used to babysit the Spanny boys, which is how long they were in Lompoc. And when they first built their house on A Street, it was nothing but flower fields to the east of there. So they had been around Lompoc for a very long time. So everybody knew me, and everybody knew my family. And the family, it was very common to go to a family gathering, and we would play pinochle, and we would drink, and they'd pass the pipe around it to even the kids. If you were over like 12, they would pass the pipe to you. And they all smoked pot. They grew pot in the garage. You know, they were a bunch of hippies. And they drank a lot. And that's just how I grew up. It was normal. It was normal. When we had El Nino, I lived in Lompoc, and I'd gone through a big ditch of water, and my Mustang stalled out because I got water up in the distributor. And the first thing my uncle did was, here, take a shot of this. That'll warm you up. Because I was soaking wet. And that was just normal. That was how we rolled. And I was roommates with this girl who had a son. We were sharing an apartment, and I had the two kids, and she had her son, and we were just running amok and having, you know, as much fun as possible. And I got busted. I got the DUI I was telling you about, coming home from Jasper's. And I didn't think anything of it. I got on the bracelet. There was nothing wrong, you know, at that point. And I still, you know, went out with my girlfriends and drank on the bracelet. At one point, I could slide it off and leave it at home and go. I think I was loose enough to where I could slide it off and leave it at home and go. And I went to one meeting, I think, during that period. I was supposed to go to a lot more. And I went to one. I saw some guy I'd slept with, and it hadn't ended well. And I was like, oh, hell no. And about that time, my dad started dating this lady from Lompoc who we thought was either crazy or drunk. I remember meeting her a couple times at my uncle's house when we were playing pinochle, and she had to have been either drunk or crazy. Well, come to find out, she was sober and alcoholics anonymous, which was very odd for my dad to date someone who was sober. But she was pretty crazy. Old Susie Taggart. Leonard remembers her. She was a wild one. She was a neat lady. And dad and her fell in love. And she knew I was an alcoholic. And a couple months after I'd gotten the bracelet off, I had had some really bad drinking binge, really bad. So she had mentioned, hey, do you want to go to a meeting? I said, oh, I can't. I've been drinking. She says, honey, it's been done. So I went to a meeting on the little red house, and I remember on D Street, and I remember there was a lot of laughter in that room, and I hadn't heard laughter in a long time. And a couple months after that, I decided that I had a problem. So I made a phone call to get some help, and I called the farmhouse. And I became a resident at the farmhouse recovery home out there on Sweeney Road and stayed out there about 6 months. But the truth was, I was tired of my kids. I really was. I didn't want to be a parent. They were bugging me. It was at that point, it had become very difficult to have two little tiny kids and be drunk. And I figured I needed some help, and I needed those kids to get away from me. So I called the farmhouse, went out there, and the kids went to foster care. It was not because I got in trouble. It's because I said I needed help, and you need to put my kids somewhere so I can get the help. And I got sober. And I had a couple friends in the fellowship in Lompoc, so it was really cool. And we had some really good times, and I stayed sober for 7.5 years during that time. And that was my first taste of sobriety. And during that 7.5 years, some lot of stuff happened in my life that were really, really positive. I went to school. I became a parent again. I got my kids back. I had two, Tara and Cassidy. Tara, my poor daughter. I just watched Gone with the Wind, so I named her Tara. Really should not be able to be allowed to name my children. But Tara, I had, you know, Tara and Cassidy, and I'd just gotten done with college, so I called my cousin. Her dad was Dick, the real Dick. And I said, hey, I'm getting ready to get out of college, and I need to move. I need, because the people I was living with that we rented a room from were moving, and so I moved in with Jessica's mom, who's my cousin's sister-cousin, I don't know, she's more like a sister to me, she always has been. We share half the same DNA, technically, because our fathers are identical twins. She had 5 kids, she was waiting tables, she was managing Denny's, and I had just gotten out of college, so I started managing Denny's. That's not what I went to school for. I went to school to become a drug and alcohol counselor because, you know, that's what you do when you get sober, right? You know, have to satisfy that neurotic need to help others somehow. So anyway, I went to work at Denny's. And anyway, my point was that she and I had 7 kids between us. And she worked at the Santa Maria Denny's, and I worked at the Pismo Denny's. And she worked day shift, and I worked night shift. And we were like 2 ships that passed in the night. We raised our kids that way. And we did a pretty darn good job. None of them have ended up in prison so far. You know, some of them, the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree, but, you know, they still like to go to the AA picnic with me. So. Planting the seed somehow. Anyway, so that was one of the best years of my life. I think when I lived, me and Kathy were raising our kids, it was hard, but it was good, you know. And then somehow, you know, after some tragedy that happened in the family when Jessica's brother died from a rare blood disease, I got to be there through that for her and for the kids, and that was a huge gift for me. And I was sober at the time, so it was good. But sometime after that, you know, I decided that the kid's dad and I, you know, we still loved each other and we should get back together. So I moved to Colorado on top of a hill in a trailer. Not just one, but 2. Real close to each other. It was a double wide. 2 single wides. Real close to each other. You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. So anyway, went to Colorado. He was a water well driller. He had his own business. So I got to continue to be a tomboy and run heavy equipment and get greasy and do some fun stuff like that, get muddy, and attempt to, you know, reconcile with the kid's father, which never worked. I was still sober at that time. Although I had quit going to meetings, I went to maybe 2 meetings when I moved to Colorado. And I cut myself off from Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a couple friends that I would call when my ass was really hurting. And I became just obsessed with being, to me, it was, oh, I'm giving my kids this gift of their father back. And then I got pregnant again. Same guy. 10-year span between the youngest, my daughter, and my other son. His name's Bryant with a T. Bryant Weston. I was sober when I named him. So, come to find out the kid's dad had been molesting my daughter, and my world fell apart, and I got drunk. He was in jail, and I'd gone down there to see him or kill him. I can't remember. And I left the jail and picked up a bottle of Jack Daniels. And the first bottle of Jack Daniels I threw in the parking lot and smashed. I thought, no, not going to do it. Second bottle got me. And I began another, packed my shit, packed my kids, and came back to California. And I didn't get all the way to Santa Maria. I stopped in Kern County. Not in a trailer this time. I was in oil down. Way better. And I began drinking. I worked at a bar. My drinking became progressively and steadily worse. By this time, my mom had passed away. Alcohol had killed her. And alcohol had killed her with the most violent death I've ever seen in my life. Um, She, every holiday usually on the holidays, she would end up back in the hospital bleeding internally, and they would fill her up with blood, and she had about a period of about a year there where she was sober, but she began drinking again, and her organs started to shut down, and I got to watch her die an alcoholic death, and the nurse had come in there and said, "Oh my gosh, your mom, how old is she?" And I told her, 54, and the nurse said, "She looks like she's 80, and she did, and that's what alcohol does to people. So anyway, I got to watch my mom die from this disease. Didn't affect me, though. I went and got drunk. Then a couple years later, my dad died from this disease, and I stayed drunk. So here I am. I had moved from Bakersfield back to Lompoc, or Santa Maria, excuse me, and with her mom, with all my kids, because I was homeless and it just wasn't working out. And I got a pretty decent job at the casino, and my drinking got steadily worse and steadily worse. And then I got my own place, and I started working at pizza place in the mall. And I was drinking at work at that point. And then I injured my back, and then I was drinking and taking a lot of pills. And it was not good. I mean, for me, this is what it was like. For me, when at the end, it was in the morning, I would have to drink before I went anywhere, became conscious, and I would do so in the shower because something was coming up or something was coming out, and it was easier cleanup if you did it in the shower. You guys can relate. So that's what it was like. It was bad, and I ended up having back surgery, and I kept telling myself, I've got to quit drinking before I go for the surgery because I'm going to have not, you know, I've got to wean myself off so that while I'm recovering from back surgery, I'm not going to be sick. And that never happened. I drank the night before surgery, and I was on my way to the hospital to have the surgery. It was outpatient surgery. And I imagined that when they opened me up on the table, the doctor would be able to smell the alcohol in my body, and he probably could because I drank every day. And when I tried to tell myself I didn't want to drink that day, I obsessed about drinking. I always had a bottle of hard liquor in my closet, and if I wanted to try and get things done before I started drinking, then I would walk by that closet and it would speak to me when I walked by, say, "It's time to drink, it's time to drink." And it would be such a struggle. And everything that I did, you know, I would be invited places with girlfriends and family members. And my first thought was, well, is there alcohol there? Because if there's not alcohol there, I don't want to go. And if there wasn't alcohol there, I would take a bottle with me so that I could maintain while I was there. So it got worse and worse and worse. I think about a week after back surgery, I came to, no, it wasn't quite a week, it was probably 3 or 4 days. And I came to, I had coming out of this fog from the pills and the back surgery, and I woke up and I was lucid, and I looked around, and my daughter had moved a air mattress in my bedroom, and I thought, well, what are you doing in here? She goes, "Mom, you were shaken." And I had been having seizures. And I drank one more time after that. I didn't even get drunk. I just ended up at the bowling alley with Laura and had a couple drinks. And the next morning, I got very, very sick. And I remember crawling from my bedroom to the bathroom thinking, God, please help me. Please help me. I can't go on like this. And I started thinking about the last time my life had any direction. And the last time my life had any real direction was the first time I'd gotten sober in Lompoc. And then I decided I would go to a meeting, and I ended up over at the Alano Club for a meeting. And I got to come to that room, and I remember my very first meeting this time around, and I sat in a chair, and I said, my name's Tammy, and I'm an alcoholic, and I was just bawling my eyes out. And it was just such a relief to finally say that in a room of alcoholics that understood me and loved me. I had reached out to a couple people that I knew were still sober right at the very end, and they said, I'll save you a seat. I had called my old friend Dee Dee. Dee Dee, I need some help. I need some help. I got to get sober. And she helped me. And so my last relapse was 9 years long, and I talk about it a lot because it almost killed me. I was very sick for a while, and I got enmeshed in the fellowship as soon as I got back. I got 90 days sober, and then I got on a committee for this and that, and I got on the steering committee, and I worked at the club, and I got enmeshed in Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, I got married, too, right at the very end of my drinking to this crazy guy that we fought a lot. And we had split up because he drank and I drank, and it was not pretty when I drank. When I drank, then all bets are off, and the rules did not apply, and I could care less about your feelings. And my favorite thing when I was drinking with my husband was to pack his shit. And I did that. Like, the first 2 years we were married, I packed his shit 13 times. Well, about the time I got sober, we had split up, and he was up in Napomo at his mom's house, and I'd been sober probably 3 weeks, and I thought, you know what? I'd never been married before because I never married the kid's dad, and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna give this thing my all. I'm gonna give Alcoholics Anonymous everything I have this time. Because I didn't do it last time. It was just fun. It was something to do. Kept me alive in my 20s. But this time I was like, you know, either I'm going to do this or I'm going to die. And I broke out my old big book. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a book like this one. This is an old, it's probably 20 years old. It's called a study edition. It has like a space for you to write on. It's a very blank space. And then in the back it has like the original transcript. I'll leave it up here if you guys want to look at it after the meeting. It's kind of cool. Anyway, some guy had bought me that. So I broke out my old book, which I still had. It was kind of moldy at that time. And I thought, well, I'm gonna work some steps. So I put it down on the table, and I got me some paper, and I got me some pencils. And I went like this. I go, oh, crap, I can't even read that. Because my eyes were bad, and I hadn't read anything in 9 years. So I went to the drugstore, and I thought, well, I'm going to buy me some of them cheater glasses so I can read. So I had money in my pocket, but it was way easier to steal them. So I stole them. I went back home, got my paper, got my pencils, and I put those glasses on, and I could not focus on anything else. I could only focus on these stolen glasses that I had. It was that point, this was my spiritual experience that I had, was I'm either going to do this or I'm not. So I went back, and I didn't tell the manager I stole the glasses because I'm not that fucking well yet. Put them back in the, back where they were supposed to. And I started writing, and I started working the steps, and I thought, you know, I'm going to do this time because there's a certain quality of life that you get if you just come to meetings. And there's a certain quality of life you get if you just don't drink. And if you choose, for me, choosing to work the steps and to practice these principles in my life is a whole enchilada, you know? Nothing can compare to that. And I'd done both things. I'd done the half measures, and I didn't want to do that again. So I decided also I didn't want to do that half measure with my marriage, so I contacted my husband. I said, hey, how are you doing? So we got back together at about 3 weeks sober. And he was still drinking, but, you know, I thought, you know, I'm going to give this marriage my all, and I'm going to see if it works. And at about 6 months sober, I was like, oh, hell no, that's not going to work, because I was ready to pack his shit again. And I told him, I said, look, you know I'm doing this sobriety thing, and you're not. And I really can't do the sobriety thing with you drinking. And my intention was not to make him get sober at that point. I thought he would for sure pack his stuff and leave, because he was not going to quit drinking. And another miracle happened. He said, okay, I'll get sober. And he got sober. And he went to meetings for a while. He doesn't attend meetings anymore because he doesn't need them, but he's still sober. And that's his shit. I don't care. To this day, we're still married. I'm kind of starting to like him. We've been married almost 10 years. You know, he's my best friend, and I do. I love him a lot. And I could not have had that relationship had it not been for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought I was totally unlovable. Matter of fact, during that period that Jimmy and I had split up, I thought, well, I'm going to find me a boyfriend. So I went to eHarmony. And I was drunk, too, and I got on the computer, and I did the 40 gazillion questions they had. And I was late at night, and I finished up, and they said, okay, within the next few hours, we'll send you an email with your possible matches from our millions of people. And the next morning, I got this email that said, we have nobody that matches you. And I poured a drink. And to this day, every time the eHarmony commercial comes on, my husband cracks up. So anyway, that's what happened. And what it's like now, what it's like now, you know, some people, what it's like now, I'm employed. My husband and I have been married 10 years. We just celebrated 10 years of marriage in June. I have two grandkids. I have three kids that like to spend time with me. I have a job. And the best part about my job is that the chair spins. But I still go to work every day, you know? But I have a life today that I never imagined, because I have some peace within myself. You know, I had parents who drank and used and partied, and were not parents. And it came to the point where, you know, I shared that I thought my mom didn't love me at all because she couldn't stop drinking. If she loved me, she wouldn't drink like that. And there was a lady that used to come to meetings here. Her name's Peggy Miller. Peggy Miller is a carbon copy of my mother. She looks exactly like my mother. And I came to a meeting one time, and I held Peggy and cried. And she let me do that. And I got to make amends to my mom, who's been gone 10 years, you know. And that shit doesn't happen unless you stay sober. I mean, I showed Peggy a picture of my mom, and she just about went, whoa, no wonder you hug me so much. But, you know, I think today what it's like now is I have a lot of people that I reach out to at different times when I need different things. And I try to be of service whenever I can. I try to do the best I can with what I've learned. I've forgiven my mom. She did the best she could with what she had. And I have this book. If you think that, you know, coming to meetings is going to make your life better, and that doing a half-assed job is going to help, since I've come back this time, I've written down the names of all the people who died from this disease, and it's time to turn the page. And a lot of these people stayed sober for a long time and got drunk once, and that was it. So if you want to have the whole enchilada, I suggest that you enmesh yourself with this fellowship, because you'll have a life you never imagined, because I have one.